If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
It's the third year of the decade, and you, a high school student, are noticing some distinct changes now. The soft glow of disco balls and bell bottoms seems to have faded into the distance, and there's a slight glow of neon on the horizon. This decade, and especially this year, feels different. As you hit the mall and arcades, there are movies and games that, unbeknownst to you, are building deep nostalgia within you. New shows are debuting on TV, and they seem pretty good. Little do you know how they will go on to dominate network TV and become some of the most watched shows of all time. When it comes to all things pop culture, it's a pretty extraordinary year, and that's only going to continue to grow. As that fall, a new album is about to be released. One that will not only change the world of music, but pop culture forever. I'm Jamie Logie, and this is Everything 80s, a podcast that looks back on a decade that forever changed the way we dress, consume, and connected. And today, we travel back to the year 1982. By 1982, the 80s, as we will come to know it, is starting to slowly take shape. Our focus here on these yearly reviews are the notable pop culture moments. The movies, TV shows, sports, music, tech, and video games. But we begin with some of the notable world events that happened in 1982. This is the year that marks the start of the Falkland Islands War. In May, we got not just a county fair, not just a Europe fair, but a World's Fair. The 1982 World's Fair and its fabulous Sun Sphere opens in Knoxville, Tennessee. Here in Canada, Queen Elizabeth signs the Proclamation of the Constitution Act, which established Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms as part of Canada's new constitution, resulting in full sovereignty and independence. In 1982, the first issue of USA Today is published. Disney opens its experimental prototype community of tomorrow, better known as Epcot. The third mission of the Space Shuttle Columbia launches in March. The Tony Award for Best Play goes to the life and adventures of Nicholas Nickleby. A stamp costs 20 cents, a gallon of gas around 91 cents. A loaf of bread would set you back 50 cents. The average cost of a new house was around $82,000, and average monthly rent was around $320. And we begin now with the movies of 1982. And this year has some of the best of all time. But amongst all those greats, there's one film that stood out among all of them. E.T. the Extraterrestrial wasn't the first blockbuster. That honor goes to Jaws, then Star Wars. But E.T. was the next big thing, and then some. The thing with E.T. is it appealed to everyone. Jaws wasn't necessarily for kids. Star Wars appealed to quite a younger audience, but E.T. was for everyone combined. The story is also a simple and heartfelt one. The premise of E.T. is all about the fear of separation and has its roots in the family changes that were happening in the life of a young Steven Spielberg. But ultimately, E.T. delivered the message that you will always be okay. And if you were of a certain age in 1982, you know that E.T. became a box office juggernaut. Jaws was the highest grossing film of all time, but for only a few years until Star Wars took hold. Star Wars held the title for only another few years until E.T. took over that. According to Box Office Mojo, E.T. has made nearly $800 million worldwide. Convert that into today's money, and it's in the range of $2.5 billion. E.T. would hold the title for highest grossing film in history for nearly a decade, until another Spielberg entry, Jurassic Park, dethroned it as the all-time box office champ. And according to IMDb, when you rank the highest grossing films of all time adjusted for inflation, E.T. comes in at number 7. It's just ahead of films like The Ten Commandments and Snow White. So that's the standout film of 1982. But there is one other significant one. The more time passes, the more astonishing Blade Runner becomes. To think that this movie was made all the way back in 1982 boggles the mind. Directed by Ridley Scott and starring Harrison Ford, it barely seems dated to this day. Blade Runner is set in a dystopian future and influenced a generation of filmmakers. Not only the tone and themes of the movie, but the look of it too, became a major influence for films in the coming decades. Like many other classics, Blade Runner didn't do great when it was first released. Even though it starred the super popular Harrison Ford fresh off The Empire Strikes Back and Indiana Jones, it had difficulty connecting with audiences. Blade Runner eventually found its audience on the emerging home video market and would go on to become a cult classic. Despite being over 40 years old now, Blade Runner is still an astonishing spectacle. It's a film that looks like it could have been released in the last 10 years, and, in my opinion, looks better than a lot of the modern CGI-laden movies. But besides those two standouts, here are some others that made a big impact in 1982, a year that turned out to be pretty stellar for movies. There was the special effects showcase released by Disney called Tron. We got Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the horror classic The Thing, Rocky III, Poltergeist, Sophie's Choice, The Dark Crystal, Grease 2, Tootsie, Gandhi, 48 Hours, Pink Floyd The Wall, Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan, Annie, and Conan the Barbarian. Taking a look at that year's Oscars, the Best Picture went to Chariots of Fire, the Best Actor to Henry Fonda for On Golden Pond, Katharine Hepburn won Best Actress, also for On Golden Pond, and Best Director went to Warren Beatty for Reds. We now turn to the world of music in 1982. And if you grew up during this time, you know 1982 is dominated by one thing, Thriller by Michael Jackson. One of the greatest albums of all time, Thriller changed the landscape of music forever. And the story of this monumental album has as much to do with the brilliance of producer Quincy Jones as it does Michael Jackson. If it's been a while since you've listened to it, here is the order of the tracks on this pretty astonishing album. Thriller starts with Wanna Be Startin' Something before moving into Baby Be Mine, and then a unique partnership that combined Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney for the song The Girl Is Mine. Next up is the song Thriller, followed by Beat It, followed by Billie Jean. The seventh track is Human Nature, moving into Pretty Young Thing, and finishing with The Lady in My Life. That three-track stretch between Thriller, Beat It, and Billie Jean blew many people's minds back in 1982, The song Thriller and the accompanying video also pushed the boundaries of what music and entertainment could be. MTV was still barely a year old at this point, and the video for Thriller changed what music videos could be. The nearly 14-minute video proved that music videos could be mini-movies with plot, production values, and, in this case, remarkable choreography. Music videos could now be, gasp, actual art. Thriller came out in late 1982, so it dominated 1983 and continued on into 1984. Seven of the singles reached the top 10. The Saturday Evening Post reported that Thriller racked up 37 non-consecutive weeks at number one. It was the best-selling album for all of 1983 and all of 1984. So, how many Thriller albums were actually sold? It's pretty tough to get a precise count, but rough estimates are about 70 million albums worldwide. Regardless of the actual number, Thriller is not only a generational album, but one of the most significant in the history of recorded music. It won 8 Grammy Awards, 8 American Music Awards, and an induction into the National Recording Registry. But Thriller came out in late 1982, meaning plenty of other albums had their chance to shine through the rest of the year. And there were many standout albums and singles representing a pretty wide genre of musical styles. According to bestsellingalbums.org, which measures worldwide album sales along with Nielsen SoundScan and chart figures, here's what the rest of the top 10 best-selling albums for 1982 looks like. Number 2 is The Eagles' Greatest Hits Volume 2. Number 3, Timepieces, The Best of Eric Clapton. Number 4, Records by Foreigner. Number 5, Hello, I Must Be Going by Phil Collins. Number 6, Toto by Toto. Number 7, American Fool by John Mellencamp. Number 8, Mountain Music by Alabama. Number 9, Greatest Hits by Hank Williams Jr. And at number 10, Kissing to be Clever, the debut album by a newer band that would have a big impact on 1980s music, Culture Club. There were also some other big albums released in 1982, including 1999 by Prince, Mirage by Fleetwood Mac, Always on My Mind by Willie Nelson, Rio by Duran Duran, Love Over Gold by Dire Straits, and The Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden. When it comes to the number one singles of 1982, here are the top 10 from the Billboard Year-End Hot 100. At number 10, Hard to Say I'm Sorry by Chicago. Number 9, Abracadabra by the Steve Miller Band. Number 8 and number 7 go to John Cougar Mellencamp. Number 8 was Hurt So Good. And number 7 was Jack and Diane. Number 6 went to Don't You Want Me by the Human League. Number 5, Centerfold by the Jay Giles Band. Number 4, Ebony and Ivory by Paul McCartney with Stevie Wonder. Number 3, I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Number 2, Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. And the number one song of 1982, by quite a wide margin, Physical by Olivia Newton-John. 1982 ends up giving us one of the all-time great year-end top 10 lists. Now we move into the video games and technology of 1982. And when it comes to the music that we just covered, something new has hit the market. A whole new music technology that seems like it was from the future. For decades, our music came on vinyl, or the tapes found in 8-track or cassettes, In 1982, music was now digital. Not only that, it seemed like something out of Star Wars, as lasers were used to play our music. In the fall of 1982, the compact disc was first released in Japan. Work on the compact disc goes back to 1976 when it was developed by Philips and Sony. Philips introduced the technology in 1979 in the Netherlands, and the first test disc was pressed in 1981. The Sony CD player called the CDP-101 debuted in 1982, and the first album officially released on CD was 52nd Street by Billy Joel. Eventually, the technology made it to Europe and North America, and like any new technology, it was not cheap at first. According to Time magazine, the first CD players could cost up to $1,000, and a CD would set you back around $17. In today's money, that's about $54 for a compact disc. Eventually, costs would drop, and people could not deny the astonishing sound quality of the compact disc. We're now about to enter the world of video games. And in 1982, there is one game, and character in particular, that continues to not only dominate arcades and home consoles, but the entire entertainment industry.
Everything 80s will return after these messages.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to technology and kids in 1982, video games have reached extraordinary heights both in the home and in the arcades. This, unfortunately, only had about one more year until everything begins to come crashing down in 1983. I'll get back to that in a moment. But in 1982, it's a great time to be a video game lover. Atari continues to rule the roost, but other competitors like Intellivision and ColecoVision had appeared on the scene. And then there was another interesting entry. A handheld video game called the Game & Watch, made by a company that many in North America had never heard of, but in a few years would be a household name, Nintendo. In 1982, some big-time releases reached the home video game market. The most notable is the home version of the arcade behemoth, a character that was originally named Puckman but became Pac-Man. The version for the Atari 2600 didn't necessarily capture everything that made the Pac-Man arcade game great, but still, we got to play Pac-Man in our homes. And my neighbor and I played it to the point that both our mothers practically dragged us outside so we could see the sun for once. But meanwhile, in the arcades, another character-based game came on the scene. Q-Bert. One of my favorite games of all time, Q-Bert was quickly embraced because it was part action game and part puzzle. The other astonishing thing with Q-Bert was it appeared to be in 3D. It was, of course, just a 2D game, but the use of isometric graphics gave it that three-dimensional look. An enormous hit in the arcades, Qbert is also unique as it was one of the few games praised both critically while still being a commercial success. The video game industry, both in the arcades and at home, was absolutely unstoppable in 1982. In my episode reviewing the year 1981, I shared some of the stats as it pertains to how lucrative video games really were at this point in the decade. A July 1982 New York Times article states that video game revenue for the prior year had hit $8 to $9 billion. This was at least twice to three times more than the revenue brought in by all movies shown in theaters. Adjusted for inflation, that video game revenue is in the $27 billion range, a staggering amount. But let's look at just Pac-Man. In 1981, the Pac-Man arcade game alone grossed three times more than Star Wars had made in the 5 years since its release. In 1 year, Pac-Man had tripled the revenue of the most successful movie in history, and all from quarters. But that was nothing. According to videogamesales.com, in 1982, the Pac-Man arcade games doubled its revenue, hitting a staggering $6 billion. In today's money, that's over $19 billion. Then there was the Atari version of Pac-Man. In 1982, over 7 million copies were sold, leading to sales of $250 million. In today's money, that's over $800 million. In 1982, the Pac-Man arcade game generated more revenue than all the money spent on movies and in Las Vegas that year. When you take the IMDb list of the highest-grossing blockbuster films of all time when adjusted for inflation, the Pac-Man arcade game made more money in 1982 than the combined revenue of Gone with the Wind, Avatar, Titanic, Star Wars, and Avengers Endgame. In 1982, there was seemingly nothing in entertainment that could touch Pac-Man. But it wasn't just arcades and video game consoles in the world of tech in 1982. The home computer is growing quicker than ever, especially with the release of a certain 64 kilobit computer that would end up in the Guinness Book of World Records. Thanks to the release of the IBM PC 5150 in 1981, a personal computer for businesses and individuals made more sense than ever. And on the home front, you could also play video games on them. Now, you had everything you needed in one machine. And one machine in particular became a staple of 1980s computing, the Commodore 64.
Well, the Commodore 64 has more built-in memory than the others, and it's under $600. So, while everyone else talks about the revolution that's coming, you can experience the revolution that's here.
Released in 1982, work on the machine began in 1981. According to Commodore.ca, Commodore president Jack Tramiel tasked his team with creating a 64 kilobyte home computer to display at the Winter Consumer Electronics Fair. One thing to note, CES was only 6 weeks away. The team got it ready, and with an estimated retail price tag of just $595, the new machine from Commodore was the hit of the show. And it would be a hit with consumers, too. Thanks to the success of the IBM 5150, the average person was becoming more aware of the benefits of a personal computer in their lives. But for many, the price tag still stood in the way. The Commodore 64 was much, much cheaper. And it was cheaper than other PC competitors like the Apple II or the TRS-80. The Commodore 64 was also easier to use and program. And for a family looking to dive into this strange new world of PCs, the Commodore 64 made the most sense. Thanks to its lower price and better usability, the Commodore 64 became, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, the best-selling single computer model in history. Exact sales figures vary. The founder of Commodore estimates sales between 22 and 30 million units. The Commodore company's official estimate is in the 17 million unit range, but modern estimates put it at around 12.5 million units. But regardless of the number, it was record-breaking. As told on the Guinness World Records website, even with the most conservative numbers, the Commodore 64 is, quote, still the most popular single model of desktop computer, unquote. And as we finish off tech, something significant also happened in late 1982, something I alluded to earlier. And it all seemingly began with a new video game released for the Atari 2600. It was based on the biggest movie of 1982. And even though this was one of the most hotly anticipated games of the year, it left consumers less than impressed. The game in question is the infamous E.T. Atari video game. Made in a lightning-quick 5 weeks, the frustrating game just didn't capture what consumers were hoping for, and copy after copy ended up being returned to stores, with many more being left unsold. Even though it didn't directly cause the video game crash of 1983, the downfall of a billion-dollar industry would be underway the next year. Something covered further in my review of 1983. Network television continues to dominate our at-home entertainment in 1982, and TV shows continue to be treated like major events, drawing in huge viewing audiences. The VCR was gaining in popularity, but not yet commonplace in most homes. According to a 1984 New York Times article, the average price of a VCR had dropped significantly. When they first came out, they were around $1,400. That's over $8,000 today. In 1980, prices were down to around $771 a unit, and by 1982, dropped to around $640. Much better, but this is still over $2,000 when adjusted for inflation. So they weren't exactly accessible to everyone quite yet. This meant you dare not miss a major TV moment because there was no chance to watch it back. 1982 is significant in the history of television as it gave us some all-time great shows. Let's look at a few of them. The first is about a unique crime-fighting partnership, but not one between two human beings. Instead, this one was about a person and his car. Starring David Hasselhoff as Michael Knight and his partner, the Knight Industries 2000, or KIT, Knight Rider debuted in the fall of 1982. Also in 1982 came a new sitcom, but one with a unique premise. What would life be like for a family where the parents were more liberal, former hippies, and their son is a staunch Republican? This is the premise for the show that featured Elise, Stephen, Jennifer, Mallory, and Alex P. Keaton. Before, Family Ties also debuted in the fall of 1982. Speaking of unique premises, what about a show that was simply set in one location with people sitting around talking? It doesn't sound like it would be too interesting, but what if that location was a bar, and one of the bartenders was a former major league pitcher? Enter a show that would become instantly identifiable from just the first few notes of its theme song. Cheers was another of the big debuts in the fall of 1982, and it and Family Ties would go on to become two of the most dominant TV shows of not just the 80s, but of all time, with some of the highest average rating numbers ever seen. Besides those standouts, here are some other big shows that debuted in 1982. Newhart, Silver Spoons, St. Elsewhere, T.J. Hooker, Police Squad, Fairy Tale Theater, Shelley Duvall's unique children's show that debuted on Showtime. There was also the Herbie the Love Bug series, the Pac-Man cartoon, and the Scooby-Doo Scrappy-Doo Puppy Hour. And then there's another significant new show that debuted in 1982, but one that wasn't in prime time. This one came on later at night and featured a former weatherman and comedian who already had a short-lived daytime show. He had even guest hosted The Tonight Show. But now, with the late night time slot, David Letterman brought his unique comedy to his new show, Late Night with David Letterman. It's a show that had a huge impact on late night TV while still being a critical success. In the 1982-1983 season, Late Night with David Letterman won the Emmy Award for outstanding writing in a variety, comedy, or music program. Late Night with David Letterman would win this award for the next 3 consecutive years, and for the next 10 years straight, was nominated for Outstanding Variety, Music, or Comedy Series. And the very first guest on that first episode, Bill Murray. Now, let's take a look at the top 10 highest rated shows for the 1982-83 season. Number 1, 60 Minutes, with a 25.5 rating share. Not far behind at number 2, Dallas, with a 24.6 rating. Number 3 and number 4 are a tie between MASH and Magnum PI, both with a 22.6. At number 5, Dynasty, with a 22.4. Number 6, Three's Company, with a 21.2 rating. Simon and Simon comes in at number 7 with a 21 rating. And number 8, Falcon Crest, 20.7. And number 9, The Love Boat, with a 20.3. And at number 10, a tie between The A-Team and Monday Night Football, with a 20.1 rating. We now move over to the world of sports and the big event of 1982, the World Cup. Held in Spain, the World Cup was won by Italy, who beat what was then West Germany 3-1 to secure their third world title. The 1982 World Cup wasn't a successful one for Argentina, who finished in third place in Group C behind Italy and Brazil. But on that team was an elite 21-year-old player who, at the next World Cup in 1986, would have a profound effect on the tournament and create one of the most famous sporting moments of all time, the Hand of God goal. That player was Diego Maradona. 1982 is also a big year for tennis. This was the heart of the Martina Navratilova-Chris Evert rivalry. They dominated the tennis world and each won 2 Grand Slams that year. In December 1982, Chris Evert defeats Martina Navratilova to win the Australian Open, completing Evert's career Grand Slam. 1982 is also the year that another dominant tennis player debuts, Steffi Graf. The other notable tennis moment and sporting moment was the surprise retirement of Bjorn Borg. This seemed to come out of nowhere, and the remarkable thing is Borg, at just 26 years of age, had already won 11 Grand Slams. Here are a few more sporting highlights from 82. Craig Stadler wins that year's Masters. Also, Stadler was that year's tour money leader with $440,000 in winnings. Today, that's around what a 10th place finish at just the Masters pays out. Tom Watson wins the US Open and the British Open. Wimbledon is won by Jimmy Connors and Martina Navratilova. On May 30th, Cal Ripken plays his very first game of what would be a record-breaking consecutive game streak. The Commonwealth Games are held in Brisbane, Australia. The Clemson Tigers win the NCAA Football Championship. And in boxing, Larry Holmes defeats Jerry Cooney to win the WBC Heavyweight Championship. Here's a look at the winners of the Big Four in North American sports. The World Series goes to the St. Louis Cardinals. The LA Lakers defeat the Philadelphia 76ers to win the NBA championship. The San Francisco 49ers win the Super Bowl, and the New York Islanders win their third Stanley Cup in a row, continuing their dominance of the National Hockey League in the early 80s. So that's 1982, a year with big-time movies, huge television debuts, a rapidly changing world of technology, and one of the biggest albums of all time, in a year with some pretty astounding music. So thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, here are some previous shows of mine for further listening and mention throughout this one. I have episodes about Knight Rider, the story of the IBM PC 5150, and an episode about the best movies of all time as ranked by the American Film Institute, and that list features a few from 1982. But besides those, there are plenty of other great topics for you to dive into. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Everything 80s podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes. If you're in a position to help support the show, you can consider becoming a part of Patreon.com. That's the platform to get access to bonus audio content, including the Everything 80s Movie Review Podcast. That's where I review the good, the bad, and the ugly of 1980s movies. Speaking of 1982, I have a review over there of Blade Runner, but also other classics like The Princess Bride, UHF, and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. If you want to check that out or learn more, just head on over to Patreon.com/80s, that's patreon.com/80s, or click on the link in the description. So thank you again so much for listening. The fact you're spending your valuable time with me here today is never, ever lost on me. I know there are a million podcasts out there, so I thank you so much for checking out mine. So I'm Jamie. This has been Everything 80s, but I'll be back soon with a new episode. Don't you dare miss it.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.